Welcome everybody tonight. This is my name is John Malanka, and I do have Corinne Malanka on this line as well with us.
Hello.
And we've received so many questions here. Our first question, I should say, and I think Corinne is good about the drug-to-drug interaction. So, does medical cannabis have any conflicts with other medicine? And we've seen this quite a bit. We're part of a lot of neuropathy groups, and so Corinne, do you want to touch up on that?
Yeah, so while I don't have a list of medications in front of me, general rule of thumb that we always look at out of the gate, whether somebody is suffering from cancer or an autoimmune condition, is the fact that they're in a lot of pain and therefore maybe on some painkillers or opiates. And this is always an important subject to bring up because cannabis does magnify, in a sense, the effects of an opiate. So we've seen patients who, obviously, we always hear about starting low and slow, and they're starting on the most minute amount of cannabis oil or tincture, and they call the next day and they complain that they were higher than a kite, and this is something a dosage you could give to a small dog. And so then we ask, well, are you on painkillers? And they say yes. So quite a bit of what our medical professionals do, and it's very important, and I'm not trained in titrating down off of medications, but they have a way of lowering your dosage of opiates and adding on the proper amount of cannabis so that you have a very, very high efficiency rate in both utilized together in microdoses. So that's some new science has come out in this past year about the fact that meaning cannabis oil or tincture, depending on what your professional recommends, combined with a minute dose of an opiate can have extremely high efficiency rate in pain management. And also what cannabis oil or tinctures do is it removes that effect that we all get. You become resistant a bit to opiates, and so that's why a lot of people on painkillers have to increase their dose over time because their body assimilates to it. So we've read some studies about how combining cannabis in a minute dose with an opiate, the microdose of both remains extremely low, and you won't have to wrap up, and you get a great efficiency rate. So that's the conflict between opiates and cannabis. I have heard that there could be some conflicting aspects to some of the epilepsy medications and also some of the cancer medications. There are drug-to-drug interactions, and it's very important to learn those and make sure that one's not canceling out the other either. So that's a very important topic.
Gotcha. And so even out here, as I mentioned a minute ago, that we work with a lot of neuropathy pain groups, and a lot of these patients are taking 5 to 8 oxycodones a day, not feeling anything, and then they try to cannabis, even 2 milligrams of cannabis, and next thing you know, they're, I don't want to say, as Corinne said, higher than a kite, but climbing the walls, and they say, you know what? Look what cannabis did to me, I'll never do it again. When it's actually the combination of the two that is, in a lot of cases, doubling the strength of the pharmaceutical. Everything we discuss tonight, please, is we're not giving medical advice. We're just giving you our expert opinion. One question that came up, and it came up quite a bit, and I'm going to let Corinne and I were talking about this, and it's a little chuckle here, but so since THC kills cancer, shouldn't all those chronic potheads be cancer-free? And that is a question we get quite a bit. So Corinne and I were talking about that prior to getting on. So Corinne, do you want to jump on that one?
Well, you know, it boils down to, yes, of course I'll jump on it. It boils down to research and data. I mean, it's a great question to address. And do we know what the percentage of cancer patients in the pothead sector, how that compares to the non-potheads and their cancer rate. I don't know the difference, but I agree, you would think. But in from our perspective and our work here, which is a very medical approach, The healing effects, definitely through smoking and vaping, you can get immediate pain relief. It can be a vasodilator. Some people do inhalers for asthma. It's great for immediate spasticity like Parkinson's or, Tourette's, those nature. But when you want to actually get in and kill cancer cells, really hit hard the inflammation in the body, there's much more concentrated and efficient ways to address those diseases. So typically our medical team and others will not suggest any type of smoking or vaping, simply that only to treat someone's cancer, because we know there's much more efficiency in the concentrates in terms of addressing diseased cells in general. So it would be a very interesting research to do a large population study and data and cancer to each division or each sector of types of people. Years ago, I was very interested in this whole cancer thing and, you know, thinking about our environment and all the wireless waves and microwaves that our bodies endure, all the electronics around us, but also all the contaminants in foods. And I thought, I wonder if the Amish community has a lower cancer rate. And that was quite a few years ago that I took a brief look, and it did show that they had a much lower cancer rate. As a matter of fact, I think when I researched it, in U.S. populations, I think I saw a report of one, which sounds extremely low, but and that member of that community had left their community for a few years. So, you know, it'd be a great study, and it is a great question, but concentrates are much more efficient in addressing chronic and grave diseases. So that's my perspective.
Great. Thank you. And then going back into that as well, here's another one here. Are all raw cannabis products non-psychoactive? I'm going to tell you a personal experience which happened to me yesterday, and here's a exact reason why. What about THCA? So THCA is the non-psychoactive portion in cannabis. So when you juice the cannabis plant, like you saw Dr. Courtney and his wife Kristen juice, that is non-psychoactive. If you leave it in the sun or heat it up, it will convert to psychoactive THC. So We're finding out a lot of our nurses and doctors are seeing a lot of cases where patients are having a psychoactive experience on THCA, the non-psycho, the acid form. And why I'm bringing this up is because yesterday morning when I was leaving the house and I grabbed our bottle of THCA, non-psychoactive, great for inflammation, health and wellness, and I took 0.05 milligrams, is that what it is? Or you there or did it lose you? Anyway, I took a little, just a normal dose, non-psychoactive, and I got to work. And next thing you know, my eyelids were heavy. I felt I was intoxicated, I'll say. So I felt it, and I realized that we left the bottle in our window at home, and the sunlight, it was in the sun probably for the last 3 or 4 days and not even realizing it. And so it converted. So THCA, if left in the sunlight, I'm a proven example that it will convert to THC. And I came to the office and the office looked at me yesterday like, what's wrong with you? And so I was an example of that it did convert. So yes, THCA is non-psychoactive, but if you do leave it in the sunlight, it will convert. And that did happen to me. So, Alice in Australia, going down under, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, John. Thank you so much for your series. I learned so much.
Oh, thank you so much.
I got a question. Is that I'm in Australia, and I'm not a U.S. citizen.
Uh-huh.
But I can come to U.S., 3 months at a time, and I have chronic fatigue syndrome and some autoimmune kind of thing, very similar to Christian. Christian Courtney.
Christian Courtney, yes. Uh-huh.
Yes. The thing is that I'm willing to fly over and I can come 3 months at a time. Would I be able to get access to, all the CBDs and cannabis and THC and THCA and all those things? And would I be able to find a farmer that I can go and live nearby to juice their plant? Can I get access to it, please? And would the United Patient Group be able to help me with such thing?
Definitely. We can refer you to people who do that. In recreational states, you're welcome. Thank you for calling in tonight. And so I'm going to go into some of these Q&A questions that we've had here. Okay, we've had a lot. So does the 1/6th, this is from Ron in Mesa, Arizona. So hey, Ron, does 1/16th of a rice grain affect someone's ability as example in driving?
Well, again, one of those gray areas because we need more research. But number one, we don't have any field tests in terms of impairment and driving. That's number one. Number two, a 1/16th of a rice grain in one person would affect somebody else much differently. So that's one of the challenges of trying to gauge impairment with cannabis. My guess is that's why we don't have anything utilized in law enforcement yet, but I'm sure there's plenty being developed as we speak. But, you know, whether driving or not, 1/16th of a rice grain, it sounds extremely minute, and in general terms, most likely it wouldn't be a dramatic effect, but, you know, everybody's gut function is different. Everyone's tolerance is different. Some people, I was just telling this story about an hour ago to somebody who called in and wanted to know exactly what they should take. And, you know, some people that we've had call us, it could be an elderly person in that well into their 80s, and they get their protocol from a nurse that where maybe they're fighting an extreme cancer. So at nighttime, sometimes a heavier potency is administered, but we always suggest that people aren't home alone or anything like that when they're first starting out. We still don't know why each of our bodies respond differently. And again, we know it's so frustrating, this whole dosing thing. And we would love to just send out charts to everybody and have everybody heal themselves. And when not any of us are 100% clear, and we were honing in as close as we can. The researchers are, the product makers are, the product makers, you know, joining forces with researchers. But back to the driving, of course, we would never want to be impaired, and to take medicine responsibly, whether it's a pharmaceutical or a cannabis product, you would always want to be home on a weekend, see how it affects you, proceed with caution, and we never, ever advise to be driving while feeling affected at all. So,
gotcha. And sometimes we hear a lot of patients, you know, that do drive, and within an hour they're not feeling anything, and next thing you know, 15 minutes later they feel something, and they say,
yes.
We had a patient that ended up calling 911 because she didn't feel anything for two hours, and she thought she was safe to drive. And next thing you know, she called 911 and had an ambulance come over, and she was just feeling the effects of cannabis. If you're in a legal state, always demand that your products have been tested. And they test. The reason I say that, because a lot of oil makers that are kind of just making it in the back shed, and selling it to people and patients, or giving it away, you know, sometimes people will cut costs. You know, a bottle of 190 proof food grade alcohol, sometimes known as Everclear, costs $40 for a bottle. Some people won't spend the $40 a bottle because they know that they can just grab a bottle of isopropyl rubbing alcohol for 39 cents. Again, we're very fortunate. We live here in California, so there are private oil makers that do it the safe way. And not to plug this, but on the episode 6, the title is Be Empowered, Learn How to Safely Make Your Own Cannabis Oil. And I'm going to go again from the lower 48. We're going to reach out to to Carolyn in Hawaii. What does it mean by the acid form of THCA? And I touched up on that a minute ago regarding THCA. THCA is a unless it's in the sun, THCA is in the raw form. So very similar if you went down to your to Whole Foods or if you're any natural food stores in your area that they juice wheatgrass. And get a wheatgrass shot. So it's very similar that you can juice the cannabis plant and drink that, and it's very healthy. Not too many people have a cannabis field in their backyard like Dr. Courtney and his wife Kristen. Now a lot of companies are making sublingual tinctures, THCA sublingual tinctures, and that's what Corinne and I have at our house. And that's what was left in the sun, and that's what converted into THC. So if you do have this, it's incredible. Have access to it. It's an incredible, wellness dose, but it's great for inflammation as well. But keep it out of the direct sunlight. So a lot of patients leave it in their closet, in their cabinet, in their kitchen, or the refrigerator as well. So thank you very much, Carolyn, for that. And let me go back to the screen here, and I'm going to go to we'll go to Hayward, California. How are you doing?
Well, thank you very much, and thank you.
Do you have?
It's really important to get the right formula, the formulation, and the right dosage for your particular uh-huh. kind of condition, and it's really important to get a medical opinion on that. And so I actually have two questions. How do I find a good doctor who has experience treating cancer? But the second one is, how much research is there on that's, let me preface it with, I'm thinking about a type of cancer that's not very common. And so my question is, has to do with what do people do in those situations and how much research there is on general cancer as opposed to specific types of cancer.
Gotcha. Actually, and because cancer is close to our family, we've done a lot of research on that. And what we've seen is that there all cancers are treated differently from a lung to brain like my father-in-law had to a glioblastoma. Glioblastomas, and please everyone, this is just our own personal experience. This is not medical guidance. If you want that, please consult a medical professional, which Corinne and I are not. We're just sharing our knowledge, which we've been doing for the last 7-8 years, and this has been our lifestyle for, like I said, 24/7. I know Dr. Sulak mentioned recently, Corinne, and help me if that's on this one, on how many studies are being done every day, and there's enough, I think, that equates to the last 25 years or something like that.
If you go to PubMed, which is a whole dictionary, so to speak, of reports and studies, he said there's so many studies on cannabis as a medicine and as a cancer fighter that it's as if the quantity equals to one report every other day since 1984, I believe is what he said. I think he said there was over 800 reports. So I was going to go dissect that one, which is my favorite thing to do, is research. And I knew there were a lot of studies, but it wasn't put in that perspective for me. But there's also, you know, what I loved is recently when the posting of the U.S. patent on cannabinoids and how they treat specific cancers, it was put up in this past year. If you can Google Otsuka Pharmaceuticals, Otsuka, Otsuka Pharmaceuticals U.S. patent, and put cannabinoids, it's a 34-page patent going through each cancer and how each cannabinoid is working on what receptor and why and what they found. So you have the introduction, and I always scan right down to the conclusion on each section just because I just want to get the goods. So that's always a great place to start as well. But again, with, you know, needing clinical trials to really hone in on this. And being that cannabis still sits in a Schedule One, takes away the ability to get federal funding for a clinical trial, and the size of trials that are required in the U.S. are very, very expensive. And that's why there are only smaller trials, and which is crazy, too, because even back to the beginning, and maybe even episode one of The Sacred Plant, where it was utilized as a medicine already. It was used for cancers. It was used for epilepsy. It was used for female issues, and the list went on, and I'm thinking, how sad is it that this whole thing went backwards, and now they're saying, prove it to us, when they already knew it. So, but those areas, the patent, Otsuka Pharmaceuticals patent, it's a long one, and the PubMed website, you know, punch in marijuana, punch in cannabis, punch in cannabinoids, you'll find a plethora of information.
Great. Thank you on that. And I'm going right down the list of Q&As here.
Oh.
If you have a medical marijuana card in one state, does it work in another legal state? I have stage 4 metastatic breast cancer in my lungs, and I'm hopeful to find out what would work best for my situation. I have no other health conditions. So, if you go to thesacredplant.com/laws, it'll give you laws by state. Some states, you will have reciprocity where you can use your medical cannabis card in one state and take it to another. I believe Michigan is one of those. A lot of states like California, currently other state cards are not accepted here in California, but come January 2018, you can come into California to be recreational legal for adult use only, just like you can have in Colorado, Washington State, Oregon State, to name a few. With that being said, traveling from state to state, is so if you have two legal states next door to each other, I'll use California and Washington State, and you're a legal California patient, or you're a legal Washington patient, you legally cannot drive across state lines. So if you and I were in business together and we were in the cannabis business together, and you said, hey, John, we're having a big weekend, you know, can you send up some more tinctures? Legally, even though two states are side by side and they're medically or even recreationally legal, it would still be due to federal law. You cannot cross state lines. Let me see if we can get a live caller here. Australia, Alice, you are live, Alice.
Thank you. I got two quick questions. One is, if I can get hemp CBD here, which is not as good as the cannabis CBD, but that's all I can get. I use it for sleep. I just want an anxiety. I just wonder if eventually it's like, you know, benzo and Valium, that I need to have more and more, because at the moment I've got quite decent sleep for about 6-7 hours. Another thing is that I cannot take it sublingual because of throat sensitivity. I usually put it in a capsule and then take it. So from now on, anything I take with cannabis, I have to take it in capsule or rectal or patches. If I take it through the stomach and through the liver, is that much difference to sublingual, please?
So I'm going to go back to the burning of the throat. A lot of patients or a lot of companies are making sublingual products that are derived out of alcohol. I'm personally, and again, that's just my own personal opinion, I'm not a fan of the alcohol-based sublingual tinctures because they do burn the mouth. A lot of patients are very sensitive that we work with, and so they're finding more success with olive oil-based, grapeseed oil-based, or coconut oil-based products. And then, Corinne, do you want to answer the second part of that question?
They do metabolize differently through the stomach and liver, and there are, which is why medical professionals need to be on board, is depending on the patient's medical history, there are certain patients that are on medications for either the current condition or a past condition that already taxes the liver, and so our medical professionals would take that into account to decide what formulation and potency is best. Maybe the potency needs to be lower to not tax the liver. So that is something I can't give a direct answer about, but I can just say simply that through the stomach and liver, the way it's absorbed and processed is different and affects the body differently and has different ramifications in terms of other medications or the effects of the treatment. And again, wanting to really hone in on harm reduction to make sure that we're not treating the body for something, but then also possibly hurting the liver or taxing the liver too much. So that's where the medical professionals come in. And I'm happy to leave it to them.
Good. Thank you, Corinne. We have another THCA question in regards, and this is from Jolene, love your name, in Spokane. We were just up there a few months ago. And she's talking about juicing and what portion do you put in ice trays when juicing. And so I know Corinne is a big fan of that.
Yeah.
The leaves only, the flowers too. See if you can answer that one, Corinne.
Well, so we've done the leaves and the flowers. I know some people only have access to leaves. I know a lot of growers will sell their leaves at a extremely reduced rate, so that's wonderful. But both can be done. And in terms of, I don't know the dose. They didn't really talk about how much Kristen was doing in that segment. She had sure had a lot. It looked like on the top of her blender. For us, we juice it through a similar to a wheatgrass juicer, and the cannabis plant doesn't have a ton of water in it, so some people will cut the buds and the leaves, or just the leaves, off of the plant, fresh, beautiful, and green, and they might soak it in a large bowl of water, you know, for 5-10 minutes, and then take it out and put it through the juicer. What we have done is rather than grow one plant to maturity and start cutting away at it and doing our juice every day and then trying to figure out how to time the next plant to be ready when the first plant was depleted seemed like a challenge, and it was suggested to me, no, just juice all your plants, cut off the leaves and buds, or if you just have leaves, juice it all and pour it into ice trays. So depending on the condition, it's all healthy, but some people will do a full ice cube, some people will fill their ice each cube spot on the tray halfway full, and that's fine. If it were me in a tough situation, I'd probably be doing it 3 times a day. So that's basically how juicing is. It's not going to hurt anybody. It's very healthy. But with Kristen on her video, I just noticed she put it in her blender. That might be a little fibrous for me, but it won't hurt to take it that way either.
Great. Thank you very much. And I'm going to go to Beth in Bend, beautiful Bend, Oregon. I used to go up to Sun River there. So thanks for joining us, Beth.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can.
Yes.
I can. How are you doing?
Oh, awesome. Good. Thank you so much. This is such
awesome.
A wonderful series.
I love it.
So here's my question.
Yes.
Can you talk about the difference in the types of products you can get if in a recreationally versus if you have a medical?
Wow. And so that was brought a great question. That was brought up yesterday, and I know I'm going to probably have Corinne finish up on this hearing, but that was brought up yesterday in our in a meeting for our next week's Learn the Current Laws about, and they discussed recreational versus medical. And so in legal states like Oregon, Washington, and now California coming up, a lot of patients, and there's good and bad about it. And so I'll share both. So the good portion of is that there's going to be more regulation, and they can find, you know, it'll be, I guess, more regulated, and you'll know what you're getting. Tested products, reliable, responsible products. But at the same time, because you get that medical cannabis card in the medical side, you do have to apply through the state. And we work with so many patients, not only here in the U.S., but overseas, that are either law enforcement that are going through something, teachers, nurses, doctors, even lawyers that are you know, that they want to try medical cannabis, but their fear is, their fear is that they are in the system now, and they don't want to either lose their jobs or, you know, imagine a police officer wanting to turn to cannabis to fight cancer. And we've seen that quite a bit. And a good friend of ours is a police officer here in California. And he had a good friend that a couple years ago that was fighting brain cancer. And our friend Alan asked him, you know, why don't you try medical cannabis? And his friend said, Alan, it's illegal. And we fight daily to keep medical cannabis off the street. And it was unfortunate that this patient died. But, you know, it's just the fear of what a lot of people have put into this plant. You know, Corinne and I were on that side for a while, and till it touched our own family. And so, back to the recreational side, you know, for a cost effective, you know, we were in Colorado, probably about 6 months ago, and we went into a local dispensary there and they charged 21%. And so, you know, on top of your medicine. So that's a lot for a patient who's depending on this medicine and doesn't have, you know, insurance can't cover it. Corinne, do you want to touch up on that? Sorry, Beth, I know I'm going all over the place on your question. So do you want to finish up on the difference between cannabis, medical cannabis, medicinally and recreationally?
But I believe it started out by saying, correct me if I'm wrong, please, that we're addressing recreational states, and what's the difference between recreational and medical? Is that what we're exactly talking about?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I'm going to get Beth back on the thing. So, Beth, you're live again. You want to ask that question?
Thank
again?
You.
My apologies.
Yeah. No, that was really interesting. Well, point one is, in Oregon, it's $180 just to get your physicians okay.
Yeah.
And then you have to pay the state $200. So if you're low income or have big medical issues, it's almost cost prohibitive to get a medical card. But my question was really about the types of products you can get. So if it's recreational, can you just go and get raw plant, you know, buds and stuff, or you can't get tinctures and THCA and all that, right? Unless you have a medical.
Apparently, in many states, and I can't say bar none, but specifically Colorado, California is brand new, and we should probably ask Omar this question, the attorney. But I know in Colorado that concentrates are only available to medical patients. Mm-hmm. They must, I mean, each state is different, but they would have to have some type of accommodation for low-income people, would be my guess. Maybe there's a program in that state. There has to be, but I can speak for here in California and the medical professionals that are in this field that they usually allot a certain percentage of their income to go to gifting medicine. So, and then also what we learned, we will all learn, but from the attorney is that in California, at least I can say specifically, you're not required to have the state card. You could have your letter from your doctor. And also in California, it's a bit different because dispensaries do carry concentrates here. And there is quite a bit of medicine available in these concentrated forms at dispensaries. They're all different. Some don't carry a lot, some carry plenty, but even when they carry plenty, sometimes they don't have the various formulations. We work quite a bit with private companies who have 15, 20 different formulations and applications, whether it's suppository, sprays, oils, tinctures, and then they'll send it directly to your home within California. So, that I can speak specifically to California, but each state has different regulations. John did mention the laws by state section, and each state you would have to look that up as to what is available to the medical patients and what the costs are and if they have some forgiveness program.
Yeah, and leading into that, we have Heather from I think that's Colorado. Do recreational states like Colorado supply fecal oil for people and patients not under medical care? No, but we've seen that. We have gone into a couple of dispensaries, and some dispensaries do have it up there, the fecal oil, and others don't. And so, you know, I think it depends on which one and who's really abiding by the laws too. So I'm going to go to another one. I'm interested in trying cannabis. I live in Montana, beautiful Montana, and I have MS, multiple sclerosis, for 26 years. And I also have, and I'm going to totally mispronounce this, fasciitis. So I know fasciitis and other autoimmune condition that had to be putting me in a wheelchair since 2011.
Is it plantar fasciitis?
No, it isn't. It's actually EOSINOPHI. So I'll get you on that one. But back to the MS, there are a lot of studies with MS, and there's a company out of the UK called GW Pharmaceutical, and they have a product called Sativex or Sativex. And let me spell it out for you. Sativex, V-E-X, and it is by GW Pharmaceutical on MS, and what it is literally a 1-to-1 ratio, 50-50 THC to CBD. But pharmaceutical companies, and I know Corinne mentioned Otsuka Pharmaceuticals, they're one of the companies I believe that bought the rights here for North America, and I think you can get it down in Thailand and Australia. But even on dosing, and I know dosing is another question that we have in here, is, you know, is it more a trial and error? And back to the Sativex, Sativex from GW Pharmaceutical, even on their own website, they are a pharmaceutical company. And it's going to sound kind of crazy, but they say go low and slow. I mean, it kind of just makes you scratch your head that even the pharmaceutical companies with medical cannabis are saying, oh yeah, go low and slow. Try this low dose and see how you react. And so, but yeah, it is cannabis is not a one size fits all, a medicine. So, and let me see here. We'll go to Tarpon Springs, Florida. You are live.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Hello. Hi. I'm good. And thank you very much for putting on the series. I have to say that I've been in the healing, alternative healing field for many years and have not really looked at cannabis because of all the stigma around it. And when I got your email, I just decided, okay, well, let's watch. I don't really know much about this. And so you really opened up a whole new avenue for me. So thank you very much. And having said that, we have a client who is out there in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And she's taking a couple of different things. She took, she has cancer and some other fairly serious health conditions. So she took, the first CBD oil that she took was the CBD with THC, the Rick Simpson oil. And she, if she took it toward evening, it would keep her awake all night. And so she went to just a straight CBD oil, and I just have a picture of it. It's a kind of a medium green color in a coconut oil base. She doesn't really know much more about it than that. And that also, if she takes it at night, in the evening to assist her, it keeps her awake. So is there, what would be the component that would do that? Is it just a unique situation to her?
So great question. And this is going to be a two-part answer. So I'm going to share my part, and then Corinne, if you want to follow up there with
sure.
that. So a lot of times, I'm going to go with Rick Simpson, start with that. So confusing with Rick Simpson, you know, Corinne and I have our, in everything we share, this is not medical advice, these are our own professional opinions, and we've met with so many doctors and researchers and scientists and patients and growers over the past 7+ years. Rick Simpson, and I know I've had another couple questions here about Rick Simpson and in cannabis. So there are a bunch of different extraction methods, and a lot of people are using the word Rick Simpson oil, RSO oil. We prefer the medical term in the medical, circle that we're in is FECO oil, full extract cannabis oil. And the same thing with marijuana. We use the term cannabis over the term marijuana. But a lot of patients, Rick Simpson, he's helped a lot of people, and that's how we started doing our research for my father-in-law is finding this. Since, in our own professional opinion, is that a lot of people have improved his recipe over the years. But a lot of times, too, with Rick Simpson's protocol, it does say take a gram a day, making your way up. It doesn't say anything. It is for a two-year-old child. And I always use the example of we're a 300-pound linebacker from the Seattle Seahawks where your friend is. And I know for a fact if we would have given my father-in-law a gram a day when he was in his wasting stages, he would not be here today. I know that from deep down in my heart, he would not be here because of that. And then, Corinne, do you want to follow up on the second part of that question?
Yes, of course. I remember she was talking about the Rick Simpson oil and how her friend then it kept her up, and then so they switched to the high CBD. I think it's a perfect question because it directly shows that you need the proper blend. So Rick Simpson oil is a high THC oil, and then you said the other one was the high CBD oil, but there's middle ground where they can work synergistically. There are also other terpenes that could be added to help with sleep, which is available here, I know, in California. I'm not sure in other states if there are companies now just selling terpenes to the oil makers. But to me, it means that the proper formulation has not been targeted, and I'm not sure who recommended either one. And secondly, but could be first and foremost, is dosing and potency. So, I mean, how much are they taking and at what time frame and all that. So the dosage would play a huge part as well. But we have heard from some of the top physicians, CBD can induce, straight CBD can induce anxiety and sometimes seizures. I know some of these doctors who treat epileptic children. We have Dr. Bonnie Goldstein coming on, and when taking a high CBD product, noticing that a child would get much more agitated, and adults as well can, if you're prone to any type of anxiety, it could magnify that. So the right formulation and dosing would hone in on that much better. I think they're both two different extreme oils, specifically for nighttime. That would need to be have a more specific blend for her.
Yeah, and actually the same thing. Make sure since she is in Seattle, Washington, a legal state, make sure that her products are tested. And I know there's been a lot of talk about products being tested in Washington State, and actually coming up in the news and people here in the states, New Mexico is finding some issues with their. Products that patients are purchasing in a dispensary, and there's been a lot of cases of people getting blisters on their lips. People are throwing up. People are getting rashes and hives because either a product was not tested or it had pesticides in there that made it into the dispensary and back out into the market for the patients. And then, Corinne, you mentioned terpenes here. If you want to,
yes.
And that's a question that we've had a few different times. So terpenes, is pretty much the aroma of cannabis, and it soothes the mind and body. And alpha pinene as well as beta pinene has the aroma of pine and like pine needles, and this helps. But it helps with alertness. Memory retention, it's kind of opening, it's like smelling rosemary or even pine needles. It opens up your nasal passage. It does help with asthma. Myrcene is more so for like relaxing, almost like where would you find like hops and beer. You'll find myrcene in there. So it's a musky, clovey, earthy smell, and it's more for a relaxing feeling. It's an antioxidant. It's good for muscle retention. Helps with pain and inflammation, and as well as depression. Limonene, which is of course lime and citrus. Picture smelling lemons and opening up, some moods. I guess having a better mood and stress relief.
So can I say one thing really quick about myrcene? Because I just read an article, and not that we deal too much in strain so much. We focus a lot on formulation, but there is some importance to this. So under myrcene, I recently came across a list of strains that are high in myrcene, and I'll just give you the list. Pure Kush, El Nino, Himalayan Gold, and White Widow. So that was interesting to see that there's actually some strains that have a high myrcene content.
Gotcha. And then back to strains too. People always ask what strain is best for this. And the thing about strains, and this is my personal opinion, is that it all depends on the grower. So if we grew something here in California, Serena's down there in Australia, and she's growing the same strain here, there in Australia, someone's growing it in Florida, as well as, I'll say, Alabama, it's all going to come out different due to the climate, due to the soil, due to the pH balance in the water, due to the grower. Some growers might throw in molasses. Some people use honey. Some people use, I've seen people use maple syrup, just get a little sweetener in there. But because, hopefully one day, I don't even want to say pharmaceutical company, but I'll say Advil. So when you take Advil, take two Advil, your headache will be gone. And hopefully one day it'll get to be that point whereas you can pick a strain. Heather in Missouri, how are you?
Hi, I'm wonderful. I had a question. I do have cancer, and I live in a non-cannabis legal state. What forms of cannabis can I take that won't show up on a drug test?
I think the non-cannabis form products. I think any cannabis will show up on drug tests, and we do see that quite a bit. Even for patients that are using arthritic cream, we've had people in neuropathy, and a lot of diabetics will rub a cream onto their hands or feet, and if they do have a nick or a cut, it has shown up in drug tests. And the same thing, with CBD as well as in THC, it will show up. And so my advice is to not, I can't give you medical advice, but my advice, if you are my loved one, is, and you are taking a chance with a job, I'm unfortunately, it is sad. We spoke with a patient today who is going through something very similar to what you're going through. And actually, she's here in California. And she's asking, wanted to know if her doctor, well, she needs to get a letter from her doctor so she can take 6 months off of work, so she doesn't jeopardize her job, because she will be treating her cancer with cannabis. And so it's sad to see that. I don't know what type of job you're in, or if it has to do with a lot of veterans, or even people on, I know a lot of people have been on kidney transplant list, and next thing when they do find cannabis in the system, they've been denied a transplant, and it's sad to see that as well. But that's what we see. Did I answer that one correctly there for you, or anything, Heather?
Yeah, I guess even if you juice it, it'll show up, right?
I wouldn't want to take the chance. On that note, please, everything we talk about here tonight, I'm not giving any medical advice. We're just giving you our experience, our professional experience. This is what we do daily. So I'm going to go to.
Hi, it's Tanya. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Tanya. And nice
Hello.
To have you here.
Yes. I actually have quite a few technical questions, and I'm thinking that maybe I'll pick one, but maybe I should wait for Dr. Goldstein with some of these. But the question I wanted to ask, which you've probably come across, is being that it looks like different cannabis preparations or different components are really effective for cancer and infections where you want your immune system to be active, and as well effective for autoimmune disease. And the question that arises is specifically, how is this to be applied when one wants to simultaneously support both the body's immune system to prevent cancer and infections and support any autoimmune disease that requires the immune system to be somewhat suppressed? And the reason I'm wondering really if one condition has to suffer while the other one benefits. I came across a medical journal article whose title summarizes that one particular issue. It's called Cannabinoid Receptor Activation Leads to Massive Mobilization of Myeloid-Derived Suppressor Cells with Potent Immunosuppressive Properties, which would help autoimmune diseases. And then it says one just other point. It seems that CBD and its cousins have immune suppressive or immune regulating effects, which regulating sounds good, and that THC can suppress the immune system or do nothing at all with it and promote certain cancers. So I know this is getting down into nitty gritty stuff, but when you see someone like Kristen Courtney, who had amazing results with autoimmune diseases, and then you see people who, you know, don't want to get infection and want to keep their cancer down, you know, this question really pops out in my mind.
I think that that's definitely a great question for Dr. Bonnie Goldstein. But what I will say is to make note that Kristen was using cannabis in its acid form, not in the extracted high potency form. So there may be a difference there that Dr. Bonnie Goldstein can address. But so they're not of the same effects. So we can make sure we go over that with her.
I know you'll be on episode 4 when Dr. Goldstein is on.
Great.
And I'm going to go to, this is Wendy Seuss, and she asked, can you spell the last research site again? No, she wrote Otsuka, but misspelled
okay.
it. Otsuka's
okay.
O-T-S-U-K-A, O-T-S-U-K-A, and they have a U.S. division as well as a Japanese division.
And it's a U.S. patent.
And it is a U.S. patent. So
it's not a website.
You've been with us for quite some time. Spokane, beautiful Spokane. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. I guess that I have had a consultation today, and
uh-huh.
I just started taking a product 4-to-1, and it caused me to be so unfocused. And it was CBD to THC, so the lady that I talked to today said that indica is good for relaxation, and a stevica, is that right? Is good for focus?
Sativa.
Sativa is good for focus.
Sativa and indica. And I'm going to go over the two main portions of the can. I'll say three: indica, sativa, and hybrid, a mixture of the both. But I'm going to talk about indica. So indica is more sedating, more for the people. The way people describe it is indica in the couch, for general terms, meaning you just want to relax and just sit in there. And some people, I'll say, watch a movie or just relax. But it does, in a lot of cases, it helps with anxiety. It does help with insomnia. It helps with pain as well as muscle spasms. My father-in-law, who has a heart arrhythmia, for example, has to have his oil made of indica and not sativa. Sativa is more an uplifting, creative, cerebral focused effects. It's helped with depression, helps with ADD, fatigue, mood disorders. And so it's more of an upbeat. And so because my father-in-law has, like I said, a heart arrhythmia, his oil has to be made of an indica strain. When you said 4-to-1 at first, 4-to-1, and I was going to ask you when you said you felt a little, I was uncomfortable or high. A lot of patients, so everybody, a lot of times when you hear, some companies will say 4-to-1, and they'll mean THC to CBD. And a lot of times other companies will say 4-to-1 and mean CBD to THC. And so sometimes when you're expecting to have a CBD to THC, but you're actually getting a 4-to-1 THC to CBD, I know it's confusing, so my apologies there. You know, you're not getting the same thing. Some people are sensitive, you know, like for myself, I'm so sensitive to salt, butter, cold medicine. You know, even if I had a glass of wine, I can drink a half a glass of wine. I'm 6'1", 225 pounds, and that's all I need if I have a half a glass of wine. If I had a full glass, you know, it doesn't do well with my system. And so a lot of people are very sensitive to cannabis, and you may be one of those. And so with the so let me ask you, the consultation, did you have a consultation with one of our medical professionals or someone else?
It was a person, a social worker in Spokane that consults with people. She works a lot with women that have had breast cancer. And so she is, I guess she's certified to consult and help people, kind of discern what is best for them. And the product I was taking was CBD 4-to-1 to THC.
Four part CBD to one part THC. And was it infused in alcohol-based, oil-based, meaning olive oil, coconut oil, grapeseed oil?
Vegetable oil.
Okay. And are you on other medications? And again, I'm not a medical professional, so I'm just sharing. I can't give you any medical advice.
No, just a lot of supplements.
Yeah. And so even with supplements too, sometimes it can intensify the feeling of cannabis. And we've seen that with patients that are having just normal vitamins from their health store that have tried medical cannabis. And next thing you know, minute amount. When I say minute amount, 2 to 3 milligrams, which is so minute, you can have more of a feeling off a espresso than you would off 2 to 3 milligrams. But sometimes it can intensify. So, it was tonight your first night of taking it, or today?
No, I did it. I did it three nights, and mm-hmm. by the third day, I was so out of it, and I was nauseous.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was mislabeled, maybe.
We see that a lot, too, because a lot of these companies, is it a professional company? Is it just someone making in their back of the, because sometimes you'll, how many times have we all made mistakes by counting? You know, you're counting your coins, 1, 2, 3. God, where was I again? Oh, let me count again, 1, 2, 3. And we've heard horror stories of people, where did this label go again? Oh, yeah, let me stick it on that. And It's frustrating, and find out if it's a reputable company. Did you get it at a dispensary, or did someone personally sell it?
And if it came with labs.
A dispensary.
And ask them if it comes with the. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, and I need to go in and ask for the testing.
I would ask the testing, and that's that. You living in a legal state. And you should have access to those test results. You should ask about that. You should. Hopefully they're accurate, and hopefully they're current. I mean, we've seen patients that have brought something where it's June, and they've walked in and shown lab results for something that happened in January, and it just, come on, guys. I mean, if it's one, make sure that, especially you living in Washington State, you should mm-hmm. You should demand seeing the test results as well. So I hope that helps out.
Actually, and after 3 days, I still feel really foggy in the head.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was mislabeled.
Okay.
Really? I mean, if you're feeling that 4 days later or 3 days later, a lot of patients too, might feel that, if they're feeling like that with a 4-to-1 ratio of THC dominant, they'll usually do it at nighttime so they don't feel – they sleep through any of the psychoactive effect. But for you to feel, a little drowsy, 2-3 days later, I wouldn't be surprised if that was mislabeled. And, you might want to go back in and just confirm, is this 4-to-1 ratio of CBD to THC? And maybe try a different product at the same ratio and see if you have the same effects. I know it's kind of tough to go back to that once you had that bad experience, but – that's what a lot of patients do.
And what I'll do, with your suggestion, is probably just take a little sesame seed size and try that first, because I'm sensitive to so many things like you.
Yeah.
So, I think it was overwhelming.
Well, so great. Thank you for calling in as well. And I'm going to go to Indiana Hoosier. How are you doing?
I'm really loving your program and I'm learning a lot, and I'm really disheartened that there's no legality everywhere.
Yeah, it is tough, you know, and you know, we were very fortunate when Corinne and I went through this, God, coming up to 7 years here with my father-in-law, because you know, cannabis wasn't our lifestyle, and the only reason we asked about medical cannabis back in 2011 was because my father-in-law was wasting and he wasn't eating, and we had come across a study that showed 40% of cancer patients pass a malnutrition over cancer, so we just thought, and you know, in the this cannabis dispensaries were popping up all over California. And so we, just asked cannabis appetite and munchies. And so we asked his doctor about that. She said, I know nothing about it. Good luck. You have 2 weeks. And so we tried that. And the outcome is, you know, he's 83 and a half. He had his ninth scan about 3-4 months ago, and knock on wood, all nine have come back with no evidence of recurrent disease. And so we're very, very fortunate that we just happen to live in a legal state. So we work with so many families, and not only here in the U.S., but around the world, that, you know, it's sad to hear them get you know, have a doctor say, well, good luck, you had a good life. And it hurts because, you know, I lost my father, and I don't wish this upon anybody. Going through what I went through, and to see my father-in-law go through that, it really hurt. And to see the outcome, it was like, oh my goodness, could I have saved my father with cannabis? You know, and he was a healthy man. And so anyway, yeah, I agree with you. I wish everyone had access to it, not only here in all 50 states, but around the world. You know, so thank you for your call, and Serena, and you're live.
Yeah, sure. That happen as I go around. So I do a lot of research. I do a lot of reading. People, you know, get tired of me giving them information, but I don't care. I'll keep giving it. I'm a bit worried with making things legal. I mean, I know it's happening for you guys over there. It's very slow in coming here. That the same thing may happen as what they used to do with black salve or bloodroot as well, and therefore people started making concoctions and adding things, and it was not becoming, you know, the best of things. And then also people were thinking that that was the only be-all, end-all to be able to cure cancer or something like that. And I'm also involved in things like Modest Needs in America, and I see a lot of people with a lot of sicknesses, and they're looking for help because, you know, they got sick from work and can't pay the bills. One of the things that I notice that goes through everything that I look at that some people don't seem to pick up is because you create a disease through the very being sometimes of, you know, majority of the time through your lifestyle, and not one thing will always, you know, cure every single thing for the same people. Sometimes lifestyle needs to change as well. So there's sort of a question in there in regards to, you know, how bad is cannabis oil going to be taken if the government takes over to control it or something like that. And also people to be aware that, you know, lifestyle has a huge effect. If you don't change that, cannabis oil or, you know, bloodroot or anything like that may not just be the only thing that can heal. Does that sort of make sense?
That's true.
It does, and we do a lot of stuff outside of the medical cannabis industry. We work with a lot of pharmacists here in America, the American Pharmacists Association, as well as a lot of neuropathy
integrated
groups. But the one I was going to get at is the International Integrative Oncology Conference. And it's funny, and I'm a fan of Western medicine, so I'm not ever going to talk bad about it doesn't work, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we're all anyway. But a lot of these international oncologists, this last conference that we went to, they stood up and they said, why do we continue on with chemotherapy when, and you'll know where I'm going with this, Serena, in the U.S., it's 2.1 success rate with chemotherapy, and in Australia, it's 2.3 success rate. And I don't know why they always use Australia as a marker, but but they're always open to different modalities. And if you can do a 1-2-3 punch, I'm a big fan of that. Where I was going with this is we sat on a panel one time, and someone asked in the audience the same type of questions you did, Serena. And these international oncologists, the first thing they said, which was totally surprising. They said, well, first off, I got chills right now saying this, but they said, we look at a person's faith once, you know, what is their faith? What is their belief system? And as well as lifestyle, but also
their
relationships, not only with their family, but their friends, and if they have a will to live. And then we start treating them. And I thought, how incredible to hear a doctor say that, an oncologist say that. And so, I think what you have in your surroundings is very important, and your mindset, it's tough. I'm guilty of having a stressful life. There were my in-laws said, hey, slow down. We want you alive. We want you here. And so health and your surroundings are very important, and mindset. So I work on that daily, and I'm going to go. Sue, you're live.
Have there been any studies? I've just been diagnosed with Lyme disease, but I have a lot of other issues too. But have there been many studies for Lyme disease with cannabis?
Yes, and so I'm going to share, not to tout and brag about one of our top nurses. She has treated herself with Lyme's and lupus with medical cannabis successfully. Just going right down the list, everyone. And I'll go with, hi, Karina, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. What question do I have?
Well, it's about finding a doctor. I was asking earlier about unusual forms of cancer.
And it's funny that you say that, and I didn't mean to cut you off there. And I agree with you. It is difficult, and you're even here in California, and it's difficult. And I'm going to say, probably a lot of doctors will get mad at me, but in my own opinion, and Corinne can back me up on here. And again, this is just my professional, not opinion, meant to be medical opinions. But it's frustrating because we work with so many patients, not only here in California, but around the country, around the globe, and the majority of the doctors will say, "Here you are, Karina. Here's your recommendation. Call me in here if you want a renewal." Well, where do I go? Just go down to the dispensary.
Right. Yes.
And it's frustrating because a lot of patients will go down there that have never tried cannabis. They go in there and they're overwhelmed. And there are a lot of dispensaries that are very clean, professional, but at the same time, they might be a line behind you and they're like, hurry up, lady, get out of my way. I got someone else behind you, and you have questions. And a lot of times this happens with pain. Is it back pain? Is it ulcers? Is it cancer pain? What type, we had a gentleman this morning call from Michigan, and he was scared to death because, one, he followed the gram dosing that he saw on the internet, and his wife took a gram. She also has a certain type of cancer where we have seen high THCs could spread it, and I brought that up to him, and he started crying because he said, actually, that's what happened to my wife. And so what happened, he went into a dispensary after his doctor said, just go down there, because they didn't have any guidance. And so it hopefully one day, and I think the AMA, the American Medical Association, has kind of put a little fear into doctors, and I think that's why. But right now, just in the last year, even at that International Oncology Conference that I was sharing with Serena a minute ago, we speak every year, and we're the only cannabis company that they ever invite there. And these are doctors from around the world. And the first five years ago, when we started going there, people avoided us like the plague. Give me a break. Cannabis, cannabis, cannabis. I brought this up and I said, how many people are treating cannabis? And I couldn't believe more than half the room, about 400 oncologists. And I said, we've been here for the last 5 or 6 years. And I said, you guys looked at us and thought we were crazy. And they started laughing. They said, because of you guys, we really did our research. And so hopefully it'll get to that point. Okay, we're going to go to beautiful British Columbia. T. Costas, how are you doing?
Oh, my God. You guys are amazing. I just want to say, first off, I live in Canada and in British Columbia where there's lots of this going on, and we're dealing with something in our family right now. And it has to be, it's my son. And a year ago this time, it was a pretty bad diagnosis, and he had had surgery. But since then, we've been doing, just like what I've heard, a lot of lifestyle stuff, our belief system, our whole family, everybody around, very good information. And my question to you is, he has been doing CBD oil for the last 4 or 5 months. He's thriving. He looks very healthy. No one would know that he has a very serious disease. The combination of CBD to THC is 2-to-1 for him. And what we normally do is it's a gram that we buy here from a very well-trusted source. The place, the dispensary, has been around for 20 years. And they have their own farmers that grow the cannabis, and it's tested and everything. What I'm thinking is, because we're going for another MRI to see how things are going, is where do we go from here? Because I know low and slow is what I'm hearing over and over again, and this seems to be working, but we need to actually treat the tumor and up the THC component, and that's where my question lies.
Gotcha. So again, this is you know, this is where a medical professional comes in with that. So back to your, I was waiting to see what if you were going to mention what your son was going through. So I'm sorry.
It is. It's a brain tumor.
Yeah. And so sorry. And different types.
No, it's a very rare one. It's called a glioblastoma, and it's
a glioblastoma.
Anaplastic cytoma, I think it's called.
And so what we've seen, and so we're a fan of microdosing, and the ones that we see, I get sad when I hear stuff like that about kids.
Yeah, he's just turned 18. He's a fighter, and he is a big guy, and he doesn't look sick at all. And it has to do with a lot of the choices we're making, but. Like you said, the medical system can do so much with what they've got. We have some very good people helping, but we're on a trial right now down in Alabama. And he had some immunotherapy done, and we're kind of being followed with that, but I believe it's all the other stuff that we're doing that's helping.
Absolutely. Well, good. I mean, that is great. And so what we've seen with glioblastomas and with patients, what we've seen a lot of patients, and again, we're fans of microdosing, but the one that we see a lot of patients really blasting the tumor on, and I don't want to give you any false hope. You know, a lot of them are seeing success, is going up to that gram a day. And it's hard to say take a gram a day, but that's the only cancer that Corinne and I have seen. And you'll hear about this if you're on with our doctor, Dr. Goldstein, she'll cover this as well. But she's worked a lot of glioblastoma patients. So I hope you sit in on that. But that
I wanted to interject one thing.
For it.
I think
go
that there also, I've spoken to some of the product makers who do specialize in this type of cancer, and I think they've adjusted a bit the formulation. It still is higher than most, but they've also added some certain terpenes as well for specific treatment. So, you know, we've seen people survive and go into remission, and it's very intricate specifically on that cancer, but we definitely know the right people who are honing in as close as possible.
God bless you and everybody that you touch.
God bless you as well. I mean, it means a lot. And this, you know, stories like this keep Corinne and I going because this is what we do. And this, I'm going to tell you something funny. Our friends say, "How are you guys doing?" And don't say
and
work.
Besides work, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Oh my God. And,
yeah, this is so engulfing, right? It's engulfing.
I'm married to my work, and I'm married to my beautiful wife. And
well, you're doing amazing things.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're just doing amazing things. Thank you so much.
Okay.
I'm just on my way to take a friend to see her husband in the hospital. He's full-blown Alzheimer's. Yeah. So.
You know, we have seen. I don't want to say cannabis has a million and one uses, but
mm-hmm.
we have seen cannabis with Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, success
major
with that
improvement,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Bye bye. Wow. When I hear anybody get sick, I get emotional. So
yeah.
You hear it in my voice. That's what you hear. Let me go back to a question here. Sorry, guys. We get really attached to the people we talk to.
Yeah.
And it's tough. Anyway, John and Sharon in Salt Lake City. We've been invited to your beautiful state a few times because of education. And it was an honor being brought in there. We're not Mormon, and the Mormon church invited us in to speak to the bishop and the Senate, as well as some patients and some of your medical facilities there. For us to be invited in, it was a total honor. And I don't know if you heard, but Kryn and I, we were the first cannabis company to be invited to the United States Capitol to speak on medical cannabis, and we were invited in by Congress, and we didn't have 10 minutes. We had 6 hours and a luncheon, and it was amazing. So
historical, yes.
It was historical. Anyway, what I was getting at is one of your congressmen joined us that day, and because of our discussions, he stood up and he said, because of the discussions that we brought to Utah on education, we have actually signed a bill into law that will allow human trials on medical cannabis. So, you know, Salt Lake City, Utah is very near and dear to our heart. So your question, it seems counterproductive. If the dispensaries have high potency cannabis, it will not be available to people that need it, and most of it is not affordable. Based on what I've heard, you may say, for instance, Oregon, the card is $200 for state fees, and the dispensary charges their amount. It seems like this is not something the average person can access. This does not even cover the cost of the actual oil that I'm guessing is very expensive. Very sad that that'll not be available unless you are wealthy, upsetting Sharon. So you want to touch on that one, Kryn? I agree with you too. And
about the cost.
Yeah, it's fresh. It's like right now in California, you know, in a cannabis card, it's not in the system, on the state system. So you can get a cannabis card from your own medical doctor. Prop 215 allows your own medical doctor to write a recommendation that says, "Hi, John and Sharon, I'm recommending medical cannabis." You know how much that costs? Nothing. Unless your doctor charges you for that, you know, for that office visit. In California, you can get a legal recommendation. And if that's not the way you want to go, you can go to a medical clinic that writes them for anywhere from $50 to $150 or even up to $300, depending on how experienced a doctor is and if he or she is going to be giving medical advice. But the majority of them will just write you a recommendation. With that recommendation, you're free to go in there. So it's not the $200 fees that the state's charging. Come January 2018, you will have to pay a fee here in California. So I agree with you that I think everyone's getting their hand in the till, and they want a little, you know, they have to cover costs, and I think it's damaging to the patient. You know, that's just my opinion. So I agree with you on that one, Sharon. So thank you very much for writing in. Let me go to another one here. And I'm going to go here to okay, so Kryn, maybe this one. This is a long one here from Maria in Pennsylvania. You talked about the importance of the right combination of THC to CBD and also the importance of THC in killing cancer cells. What about products that claim to have very little THC or no THC at all? You also talked about the importance of terpenes, which we did talk about that a minute ago. There are some products mixed with lemon oils and other oils, not only to make them taste better, but to add additional effects. Does that affect the effect of the terpenes in cannabis? So, yeah, I'm a fan of terpenes being included in a lot of oil makers. Professional oil makers can add that in, and actually the company that we're going to have in on episode 6, Be Empowered to Learn How to Safely Make Your Own Cannabis Oil, they specialize in adding terpenes into their oils. So back to your question about THC. So just from our knowledge and what we've seen, THC, yes, does kill cancer cells, so we are a fan of the entourage effect. Of combination of both THC and CBD mixed in with terpenes as well. From what we've seen, THC is needed when treating, like even, I'll use epilepsy, a lot, and this is another reason we are brought into Utah. Epilepsy is a CBD, Utah is a CBD only state. CBD via cannabis or via hemp, which we've seen a lot of, and Dr. Goldstein will talk about this, only works in about 10 to 15% of patients. Add a little THC, not enough for anybody to get high or uncomfortably high. That number, just adding a little THC in there, will help up to 50 to 60% of seizure patients. Hope that made sense. Go on, Corinne.
No, I was just going to interject also, though, about the CBD. I mean, that's not to say that there aren't anti-cancer properties in CBD. There are, specifically anti-proliferation. It aids in arresting the spread of cancer cells, and which is why we always talk about the entourage effect, that the most efficient medicine, as we see so far, is a combination of, terpenes, cannabinoids, flavonoids, subcannabinoids, all of them. There have been studies where they've extracted single molecules and tested them out, and whether they tested the CBD alone or the THC alone, the most efficient medicine was a combination. So, yes, they both can fight disease and cancer, but it's a bit of a struggle when they're single molecules.
Thank you. And I'm going to lead right into the next one here, which is John in Vermont. And Corinne, maybe you can touch on this here too. I'm on a medical marijuana program to control my seizures, and have tried different THC potencies and combinations with CBD oil, but have not been able to completely control my seizures. I don't get much help here from the clinic. Who just say to try different mounts and combinations, and I'm frustrated. I'd like to talk to somebody.
We do hear that, not very often, but we do hear it, and I know we sound like a broken record saying, medical direction is best, not to just keep trying different formulations. Here in California, our medical professionals do have quite a bit of information to hone in on the target as close as possible. But then, and I never thought that this discussion would be heavily weighted in terpenes, but we do know that the medical professionals do, when they're in this situation, add a specific terpene. Depends on the patient, but they'll add a specific terpene that's also aids in anti-seizures, and that seems to be the ticket when people have not seen results with the typical or, I guess, the average way people are going about treating epilepsies.
Let me ask here, how can we identify the various types of cannabis and know what you're getting? This is from, is it Rennie or Rennie? She's in Falls City. How can we identify the various types of cannabis and know what we're getting? Does someone have a list, a chart or list? So, I'm not a big fan of Google, but I'll say Google. So, but if you Google sativa and indica, you can see the different types of cannabis. If you want to Google sativa, S-A-T-I-V-A, as well as indica, I-N-D-I-C-A. And you might want to, while you're there, look at hybrid. It's like a hybrid car. Look on that and you'll get some ideas. From Stephanie in Georgia, for heavy metal toxicity, is there a cannabinoid that works best to detoxify the body, and should a person detox prior to moving to CBD? I've read that CBD can cause the brain to soak up those metals if you detox first, and I've never heard that, but in regards to detoxing, I'm a fan of naturopath doctors, it's funny, the reason I'm saying this, Corinne and I will get our blood test probably 3 times a year just for health and wellness reasons. And naturopaths can take the blood test a step further, whereas your normal doctor, you'll get a chart from, you know,
all the basics.
All the basics, and a naturopath can pull them up. So back to where I was saying, living a healthy lifestyle, and I run and ride my bike every day. We go to the gym. We eat well. We're not drinkers, and actually, not even smokers. We're THCA users.
Yeah.
So one day I went in and I got my blood test, and my doctor said, "What are you doing? You're literally my star patient." And I said, "What do you mean?" They said, "Your liver. That's what it was. Liver is like you're a drinker." I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was borderline diabetic, which I'm not. Cholesterol was up, and she said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm trying to live a normal life. You know, I work out every day." And she goes, "I know." And I said, "The only thing I'm doing, I'm even going to my acupuncturist." And she looked at me to keep my stress down. And they're the next building over, and she said, "Let me have your finger." So she did a finger prick test of blood, and I came in the next day, and my body was loaded with metals. And I was like, "How in the world?" And she said, these herbs that you're taking, no disrespect to Chinese herbs, because I'm...
And there are some good ones, yes.
There are some good ones, and I grew up over in Asia for 8 years of my life. But I was loaded with metals. And so I went into my naturopath office, and they have IV treatments. And even for our cold and flu season, Corinne and I will go in there and get an IV of A through Z with kidney and liver cleanse, et cetera, but I went in there, and they also did, I want to say it's ozone therapy, Corinne. Is that what they did?
I think that's what it is, yeah.
Ozone. Anyway, but I went in there once a week for a month, and then I did a blood test after that, and they sucked out all the metals out of my body, and guess what? My liver went back to normal. My cholesterol went back to normal. My borderline diabetes went back to normal. So Stephanie, I personally have not heard about CBD to cause a brain soak of the metals. So I apologize, but I am going to cut and paste your question, and I'm going to talk to one of our medical professionals about that. And I do have your email here too. So let me put that here before I forget.
Yeah, it's maybe not the cause, but the fact that some CBD products have heavy metals in them.
I wasn't even thinking that, so thanks, Corinne, for saying
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So, yeah, basically, I mean, there are, if hemp is imported, depending on the company, which most of them do import, but there are a select few that don't and grow here. But, yes, if they're contaminated with heavy metals, it's not that the CBD is making you soak it up. And we'll definitely run this past our physician, but it just implements it into your system when you wouldn't normally be taking in heavy metals because you're simply taking that product. So, but that's a good question to run past.
Yeah, and actually I know Dr. Goldstein will – she's wonderful. And actually, back to John and Sharon, she was one of the doctors we brought to Utah with us. And they, your Utah government and medical professionals had a lot of questions. And through, she was under fire, and she just kept her cool. You guys are going to love, when I say love her, you will love her.
Yes.
She's not only incredible what she does, she's top of her practice, but she's just a great person and a dear friend of ours as well. So if I didn't answer your question regarding that, I know she will be able to. So, Heather, how long does cannabis stay in your system? If I was drug tested, how long do I have to wait for a clear test? So,
it depends on the type of test, you know.
Well, it depends on the type of test. Go on, Corinne, I cut you off.
No, I was just going to say, is it blood? Is it hair? Is it
saliva?
You know, saliva. It depends on the test. I do know that, but we've heard anywhere from 7 days to 60 days.
Yeah.
and it'll depend on the test, and it'll also depend on how recent the use was.
And the type of user, you know, meaning is it a cannabis person, a patient who's been using cannabis every day for the last 20 years and literally using it every day, or is it a patient who has a lot of body fat? So I know patients that have, they say it's stored in the fat. You know, if you were drug tested, I would probably say 60 days, in my own personal opinion. Again, I'm not a medical professional, you know, or in 6 days or longer. So I hope that helps, Heather. So thank you for asking that question. And I'm going to go right down and answer a couple more here. And you know what? I'm going to go right back. Let me go to Cody from Montana. How are you doing, Cody?
Well, thank you. I got on my question earlier.
Yep, I know exactly who you are. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. And that's eosinophilic fasciitis is how it's pronounced.
Hand up to correct me on my pronunciation. So will you say it again?
Eosinophilic fasciitis.
Eosinophilic fasciitis. Gotcha, Montana. Montana is near and dear to our hearts, but they've had a lot of changes over the years. And I think you heard the story that we mentioned about I'll get emotional here now, but our dear friend, the Cash Hides and the Cash Hide Foundation, if anybody wants to look them up. But Cashy was a pioneer, and he was literally the first and youngest legal medical cannabis patient in the United States of America. And he really paved the way for medical cannabis treatment for pediatrics. And my friend Mike and his wife is a delivery nurse. And you know, I can go on with the story, but the laws changed. You know, he beat cancer twice, and the law. And he was two when he started, and he beat cancer twice. And at age 4 and a half, the laws changed in Montana, and they did not have access anymore. And at that point, little Cashy said, no more pokes. And here, little child, do that. And his last night on earth was at our place in Montana. So, and now the laws have changed back to where it's medical now. And it's, you know, losing anyone, I don't care if they're two or 502, it still hurts, you know. And
Especially with children, though.
Especially with children. We're in this business because of compassion, and I know, you know, I don't get on, I'm not on social media ever. It ups my anxiety. So, I mean, I've missed a lot of birthdays and a lot of anniversaries, and people get mad at me, but I say, you know what, my health is more important. I'm
right.
Sorry, I'm not being selfish, but sometimes that's why I don't get on. But someone wrote probably about 7-8 months ago, and all these laws are changing, and everyone's becoming legal states here and legal states there. And someone posted on a thread, if you don't have, because a lot of people are jumping into this industry thinking it's a get rich quick industry, and it's frustrating for the, you know, because there's a lot of great people in this industry who want to help out. And this one woman wrote, if you don't have compassion, don't come. There's no place for you in this industry, because it's frustrating when I hear patients talk to a doctor or somebody, and they come back to us and they say, you know, they didn't have any time with me. They were frustrated at asking questions, and you know, it's frustrating when you're trying to ask for help. You're scared. You know, you've been diagnosed with something, and you're scared, and you have questions, and you don't want to be in that position thinking you're annoying somebody, you know, having questions. And so it's frustrating when, and I hear it every day. And that's one of the disappointing things about this industry, when people don't have compassion, you know, you know, cancer or any diseases, they don't discriminate on who they're going after. And,
that's right. And I've listened to you guys enough now that I know you're definitely, very compassionate, and we all appreciate that so much.
Well, I wear my emotions on my sleeve, as you probably have heard.
John, As wonderful as it is, I think we're going to have to cut you off tonight.
Okay, well.
No, I love it. I love everything you've done. You know, John and I do work very hard, probably so much so that we don't get to, we only talk to the people who call our offices, and it's really wonderful to hear that people are listening and that the ripple effect is happening just as we had hoped, and it's just a message to us that we're on the right track, and so is everybody in these conversations.
Renee, I'm going to just throw your name out. Do we have results on someone with Crohn's? There are a lot of results, a lot of success with Crohn's, and we've even had our own medical conferences. Have in the way we do it, we have medical professional patient, and we've had some incredible stories with Crohn's. And again, I never want to give anybody false hope and say this is a one size or a 101 million uses of medical cannabis. But we've seen a lot of success with Crohn's, and actually, Corinne's sister has Crohn's and
has or had
had. But this is the first time in her life in the last 5 years since we all got into this industry, not only with my father-in-law and the information we've seen, but she's living a normal life right now. And so
she did go plant-based diet, but yes, she is living in what seems as like a normal life.
Yeah. I got the good sister though, but yeah.
Not to mention, I was going to say that the double blind studies they have had out of Israel are extremely promising. Not to mention the anecdotal stories. We know plenty of people who are in remission from Crohn's here in the U.S. And it didn't seem all that difficult, but there's definitely improvement. We can say that.
Anyway, just want to thank everyone for being here with us tonight, and truly means a lot. This has been fun. It really has been a lot of fun.
Yes.
Doing this webcast has been a total joy. So I just want to greet everybody around the world from Australia. I know we had the Philippines. We had Hawaii, Alaska, Louisiana, Ohio, Colorado, Georgia, London. So, and of course, down in Bali, and we had Bali and Perth. So, bless everyone, and I just want to thank you in believing what we do as well. So,
yes.
Have a wonderful evening, and just want to say good night.
Good night, everyone.